This morning I would like to look at a text this morning from Acts chapter 12. We find an interesting account of a prison break. I'd like to start out just by reading this from Acts chapter 12, beginning with verse 1, talking about Peter's miraculous escape from prison. It was about this time that King Herod arrested some who belonged to the church, intending to persecute them. He had James, the brother of John, put to death with the sword. When he saw that this pleased the Jews, he proceeded to seize Peter also. This happened during the Feast of the Unleavened Bread. After arresting him, he put him in prison, handing him over to be guarded by four squads of four soldiers each. Herod intended to bring him out for public trial after the Passover. So Peter was kept in prison, but the church was earnestly praying to God for him. The night before Herod was to bring him to trial, Peter was sleeping between two soldiers, bound with two chains, and sentries stood guard at the entrance. Suddenly, an angel of the Lord appeared, and a light shone in the cell. He struck Peter on the side and woke him up. "Quick, get up," he said, and the chains fell off Peter's wrist. Then the angel said to him, "Put on your clothes and sandals." Peter did so. "Wrap your cloak around you and follow me," the angel told him. Peter followed him out of the prison, but he had no idea that what the angel was doing was really happening. He thought he was seeing a vision. They passed the first and second guard and came to the iron gate leading to the city. It opened for them by themselves, and they went through it. When they had walked the length of one street, suddenly the angel left him. Then Peter came to himself and said, "Now I know, without a doubt, that the Lord sent his angel and rescued me from Herod's clutches and from everything the Jewish people were anticipating." When this had dawned on him, he went to the house of Mary, the mother of John, also called Mark, where many people had gathered and were praying. Peter knocked at the outer entrance, and a servant girl named Rhoda came to answer the door. When she recognized Peter's voice, she was so overjoyed she ran back without opening it and exclaimed, "Peter's at the door." "You're out of your mind," they told her. When she kept insisting that it was so, they said, "It must be his angel." But Peter kept on knocking, and when they opened the door and saw him, they were astonished. Peter motioned with his hand for them to be quiet and described how the Lord had brought him out of prison. "Tell James and the brothers about this," he said, and then he left for another place. In the morning, there was no small commotion among the soldiers as to what had become of Peter. After Herod had a thorough search made for him and did not find him, he cross-examined the guards and ordered that they be executed. And kind of keeping with the topics, the themes that Dion and Shannon have been preaching on, this idea of the one another passages, I chose this morning to speak about the idea of praying for one another. And I must confess to you that for me this is probably bad territory to venture into, because I'm not very good at it. Matter of fact, I won't say probably the worst, but my estimation of it is I fail at this miserably. I don't know what it is. I'm too wrapped up in myself. I'm too caught up in furthering my own kingdom to be worried about what's going on for other people. Maybe. So the perspective I bring to you this morning on praying for someone else is not from a participant, but more so as a recipient. I stand more in Peter's shoes this morning than the church at Mary's house who was praying for them. Some of what I'm about to tell you may make you a little bit uncomfortable. And I just want you to let you know that up front. Many times when we look about at others, we see everybody else, and You've got it all going on. Everything's okay. You're great. Everything's fine for you. You look good. You smell good. Everything's just going nice. It's not always been that way for me. Matter of fact, it still isn't. And so this morning, I want to let you in, open the door a little bit, and let you peek behind the curtain a little bit. When I was in my early 20s, there was a time where I was a very rebellious young man. I did a lot of things that I'm not proud of, but I share them with you as a testimony to God's ability to break down prison walls. I was into alcohol, drugs, dealing drugs, visiting bars and nightclubs and any of the seediest establishments I could find, drunken driving, vandalism, theft, profanity, bigotry. Whatever you may be thinking right now and wondering, probably guilty of. Like I said, I don't bring that to you this morning as a boast or a brag, but to let you know that just like in this passage, God has the ability to make a prison break. The first thing I'd like to point out is that imprisonment is the work of Satan. Whether that be a physical jail cell, whether that be an addiction, whether that be abuse, whether it is somebody who is a victim, they are there by not their own doing, but as a matter of circumstance, or whether that's somebody who is there by choice through an act of rebellion and disobedience. The work of imprisonment is Satan's work. In the passage, we find that it's looking pretty bleak for Peter. Talks about how Herod has already put James to death. Now, this Herod is not the same Herod that killed the John the Baptist back during Jesus' ministry. That was his grandfather, I think. But he's already taken the life of one prominent figure in the church. And he has every plan probably to take Peter's head right after the Passover. Couldn't do that sort of thing during Holy Week. But fresh on its heels, when all the people are still there and everybody's in a great mood for a hanging, let's get Peter's head on the block and get it up in public. Peter was in real danger here in this imprisonment, just like you may be, just like your loved ones may be. It's real danger, it's real imprisonment, and it is Satan's work. He would like nothing more than to murder every single one of us and walk off laughing. And so we find ourselves in times and places, whether again it's our own making or we're just victims, we find ourselves imprisoned due to Satan's work. Second thing is that rescue is the work of God. When Peter was chained up, I mean, you can picture the situation. He's got four guards watching over him, one man. He has two chains on his hands, two guards that were in the cell with him, and two more that were out in the sentry post. Nobody could get into him. He's in a block, stone cell, iron bars. He's not going anywhere, as far as he knows, as far as he is able to get his way out of. But God's rescuing happens for him. And here's the first thing I'd like to say. God's rescue happens in His time. Not in our time. Peter's rescue was what we would call at the 11th hour. Again, he's right there, literally facing death probably the next day. You talk about you watch a movie, it's a nail biter, all the suspenses build up to one point, the climax, and is it going to be resolved in our hero's favor, or is it all going to fall apart and the tension is building? We're at that point. This is tomorrow morning at the break of dawn. Peter will be brought out. Herod will put together a mock trial and he'll have him murdered. And God steps in and rescues him at the 11th hour. Also, maybe your rescue will happen when you've hit rock bottom. It may not be a matter of timing. It may be a matter of position. We see what in Matthew 14, the prodigal son. Luke 20, wherever. I didn't write it down. With the prodigal son. He finds himself, he is slopping hogs. Here he was, the heir to his father's fortune. He's blown it all. You talk about stepping down the ladder of success. He's come to the bottom rung, and now he's feeding pigs and would just love to have some of what the pigs are eating to put in his own stomach. It can't go anywhere lower than this. And it's at that point, that very point when he's at the bottom, that he's ready to be rescued. I look at my own situation. I had a lot going for me coming up. I was raised in a Christian home with loving parents. I had all of the advantages of faith instilled into me from an early age. But I had chosen to turn my back and basically to run away. And God let me. Until I was down to the point to where there was nowhere else but up. And that was the point where I turned and looked back to God. And just like the father and the prodigal son, he was standing there waiting with open arms. When God rescues someone, sometimes the escape seems surreal. Peter, in his situation, he thinks he's having a dream. The angel comes, the light shines, the chains fall off, the doors open. It's like, come on, get your coat on, let's go. And he walks out the door. And he just thinks, wow, this is a great dream. I wish this was really coming true. And it's not till he's gone down the road a block or so, and finally the angel leaves him, then it hits him. This is real. My own situation seems surreal. I look back on it now. I was staying with a couple other guys in an apartment. Didn't do a whole lot of productive things, a little bit of work every once in a while. But I remember I was sitting on the couch watching some political documentary, or I don't know what it was. And some, to this day, nameless face stood there and said something to the effect of, oh, as a politician, really the only thing that you have is your word. Because everything else can kind of be cut out from underneath of you. But if you keep your word, if you tell the truth and you stand by what you say, that's really all you have in this business. Didn't seem like an angel to me. But there was something about that that struck a chord. Because then I looked at my life and this surreal kind of fog that it had become. And I realized that I wasn't living the truth. And it's not till some time later that I could really look back, probably better part of 18 months, that I could look back and see that was the place, that was the time where God's angel came and said, "It's time to get up. It's time to put your coat on. We got to go." At times I look and I think, strange for me to pass judgment on God's actions. But it's appalling the depths to which God will stoop to have us back. Wasted, broken, bankrupt lives. And for all intents and purposes, are worthless. And even at that point, when we turn to Him, if nothing else, to save our own skin, He's willing to accept us back with open arms, with rejoicing. Maybe it's best said by Paul in Romans chapter 5. While we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. He's willing to accept us at whatever depths we might find ourselves to have sunk to. And He's patient. He doesn't force the issue. Not the way that we would. You know, when your kids are young and you have quite a bit more control over them. Kenan is 6, and you know, if I tell him he's got to do something, he may not like it, and he may like to do otherwise, and he may even try to do otherwise. But at some point, at 6 years old, he's going to do what I make him do. I have a great deal of influence over the boy. And Jesse's just starting to fit into that same pattern. That's not the kind of pressure God puts on us. He sends to us the circumstances and the people to just keep pecking at us. Keep that little reminder. Keep tapping us on the back of the head that He's there and that He longs to have us home. Peter says, He's patient with you, not wanting anyone to perish, but everyone to come to repentance. So how have we gotten to prayer? The theme for this morning is pray for one another. And this is where we find ourselves. This is where you and I find ourselves. Intercession. Going before God and pleading. It's the work of those who wait with tearful eyes as they watch someone they love rush headlong towards destruction. I was previewing a book. It's called Wild Child, Waiting Mom. And it told the tale of this mother who her 16-year-old daughter, she didn't really run away. She went to social services to get away from her family. Fine Christian family, struggling with two young adults in their household. The girl had gotten pregnant. It's just one more strike against her that she knew there was no way she could bring to her parents. And so she ran in the only way that she knew. And she continued to run for the better part of 10 years. Multiple marriages, multiple arrests, multiple rehab centers for drug and alcohol abuse. And the whole time, the parents were powerless to do anything but to pray for that child. And I stand before you to testify that there's two women sitting right here this morning, my mother and my grandmother, that I know they prayed for me every day. Every day. And I don't doubt there was others. With a broken heart. And it pains me today to see and to confess before you. But I'm so thankful. And just like Peter, I stand as the one who was freed from a prison that I had no power to get out of on my own. I was stuck in a downward spiral pursuing paths that I knew led to nowhere but death. But I chose to go there anyway. And there was people who stood and prayed on my behalf every day. And so I urge you this morning, don't give up. Never give up. Never, never, never give up. If you're the only person, if you are the only person who is going before the throne of God and asking, please, Father, rescue my child, rescue my loved one, He hears you. And He's working on it. The prayer of a righteous man is powerful and effective. I, like Peter, can say, now I know without a doubt the Lord sent His angel to rescue me from Satan's plans and all that he had designed to do to me. I identify with this story. To stand and look back now, it's terrifying. To just think where I might be today. Now, I can guarantee you this, it wouldn't be right here. It would be anywhere but right here. Because I was running fast. We get to the good part. Rejoicing is the reward of the faithful. There's a song on contemporary Christian radio station. It's called Welcome Home or Welcome Home You. I don't remember exactly the title. Sung by a young man who was in a rock and roll band, living life fast and large and lots of money. Talks about the words of his father in his ear. You're never alone, no matter where you go. And to hear His words when He came back, "Welcome home. I know you by name." We will get that same greeting in heaven. There's a beautiful picture painted by Max Lucado in one of his books talking about God welcoming us home, standing with open arms and tears streaming down His face to take us in His arms and just welcome us home, to the rejoicing, the party that it will be when we get there and we see it for ourselves. In the words of the Father, "Let's have a feast and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and now he's found." It's the reward of those who never give up. I can look back and see how God has pursued me. I promise you, I was running hard the other direction, and He pursued me. It's the reward of my mother and my grandmother today. And I hope I do you honor. Final question is, will you be used by God? Will you be the one who stands in the gap and intercedes for somebody else that you love? A child, a spouse, a sibling, a co-worker. Maybe it's somebody you've never even met. You can make a difference. I hope this morning that what I've shared with you has not only touched you on an emotional level, but has motivated you to do something, to take the action into your hand that you're capable of taking, to intercede and to pray for someone, that God will work out the situation in their life, that the people will come, that the circumstances will come, and there, in that moment, they will have the opportunity. They will come face to face with this conflict to turn and to continue to follow their own bankrupt path, or to turn their face and run to God. Maybe this morning there's somebody that you need to pray for. Maybe there's somebody this morning that you would like for us as a body to intercede on their behalf, to lift our collective voices to God, cry out to Him, "Please, rescue this person. Set them free from the prison bars that bind them." Maybe you're trapped in a prison. Maybe you look at your own life. You say, "I'm the one that needs to be set free." The only way you're going to find that freedom is through the precious forgiving blood of Jesus Christ. All that stuff that I did in my past, it's real. It's still there in my past. but it's forgiven. In God's eyes, it's remembered no more, just as if I had never done it. That's what He offers us, a chance to start over every day.